Good evening, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebar. I am Pastor Zach, and tonight we are getting into the second question that I have on my list. Don't forget, send your questions in. We will make sure to answer them, those kinds of things. But the next question that we have for tonight, one that I commonly run into with, shockingly, saved and lost people alike, is the question of God's goodness. And when we're talking about this principle of God's goodness, you've probably heard this phrase tokened more along the lines of this: how could a good God allow so much evil, pain, and suffering to happen in the world? It's a very common question. It's a question that Christians are terrified of, which is shocking to me because we actually know the answer to this question. And it's actually not a fairly over-the-top, difficult-to-put-together answer to such a question either. But this is one that you will hear often that has been troped for about the last 30, 40 years in people that are of an atheist background or of an Eastern religious background. There's a lot of different ideologies that have kind of come together to make and form this question. And so when we're talking about how is it that a good God could allow evil, sin, suffering, pain, you know, whatever bad thing you want to insert into that question, we have to kind of ideas behind how this question is of this question. And one of the things that we must is, what exactly do you mean evil or suffering into the world, right? Because when we're talking about God allowing something, we have to talk about, well, how is it that this even came to be, right? If I'm going to talk about how God has allowed evil or pain or suffering or misery to enter into the life of humanity, then I have to get to the root of, what exactly do you mean by pain or suffering or evil? And what exactly do you believe about it? And so what we call with this phenomenon is, we call this the problem of evil, okay? And that's kind of a very mysterious, mystical way of saying, what do you believe about pain, suffering, and evil in the world? What do you believe about where it comes from? What do you believe about how it manifests itself? What do you believe about it as far as how it shapes the human condition? Okay, and this is something that has eluded mankind for a very long time, and there are a lot of different ideologies behind this. One such solution to the problem is basically the idea of denying God's existence and therefore denying evil, right? Because when we talk about evil, the very nature of the word indicates there has to be something that is good. So when we take this principle of evil and we say, well, how is it that if God is really this loving and good God, why would he allow evil or bad things to happen in the world? Well, one of the answers that mankind has to this is, well, actually, no, there is no God, and therefore there is no evil, denying the reality of wrongdoing. Well, we have a couple of problems in using this solution, okay? And I know with it, if you're on here and you're saved and you're listening to this, you're probably throwing your hands up in the air, just time out, I'm getting to you, okay? Okay, so let's go down that rabbit hole. I'll say I agree with you. Okay, God doesn't exist, therefore evil no longer exists. Well, we have an issue here, because you as a human being, even if you deny the existence of God, you have a problem in your theory, and that is that you have a basic moral sense, quote-unquote, a conscience, meaning that you automatically, by nature, rank things in categories of good and evil. And that is within your genetics, that's within your psychology, that's within who you are as a biological being. That's not something that has been formulated or is culturally appropriated onto you or has been established deep within you, you know, by your upbringing or your raising. You know instinctually when something is right or wrong. So to try to say that we're going to deny the existence of God, therefore evil does not truly exist, it's just life. Well, that would be foolish, because even in your basic human conscience, there's an idea of right and wrong. Well, that's why we have laws. That's why we have government. That's why we have police officers. That's why we have all of these things. Is if I say that there is no God, therefore there is no evil, well then what is wrong about me going over to my neighbor's house and burning it to the ground and killing her and her family and taking everything that she has and coming back to my house and just living my life that way and amassing power and wealth and all of these things? Because to take away that fabrication, to say that there is no such thing and that that does not exist, well, then what's the point of how we live our lives? You know, oh, well, there's mutual benefit. Well, not necessarily. What if I believe that I would do better on my own and that I don't mutually benefit from this system and I can actually overthrow this system? That's the kind of mentality that you see develop in places such as Nazi Germany and places such as Mussolini's Italy and, you know, these kinds of things. Is there are these people who forsake the existence of God, they forsake the existence of evil, and in and of themselves become evil incarnate. So that solution is just going to fall right on its head. You are already programmed to know that there's such a thing as right and wrong, even if it's on a very, very rudimentary, basic level, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill kind of level of understanding. So the first solution that the world offers you is to basically deny evil. Well, you can't do that. There's no way to deny that. In fact, you wouldn't even formulate a question about how could a good God allow such things if you honestly believed that there was no such evil in the world. The next thing that comes into play, the next thing that the world has taken to try to deal with this question of the problem of evil, is making evil a part of who God is. Now, again, if you're on here and you're a Christian, time out. I'm going to get to you, okay? Therefore, when we take that and we say that, well, evil is actually a part of who God is, so we're again denying the existence of evil. Now we're not just denying the reality of it. We are denying it as being an actual problem. You see this ideology in Hinduism and in Buddhism. It's even kind of funny to me that one of the biggest cinematic movements in the United States right now is Star Wars, okay? My brother-in-law, he loves Star Wars. And I think it's very funny to me because if people actually understood what is playing out in that movie, I think there's a lot of God's people that would not be such a huge fan of it anymore. And the reason for that is that the idea of the Jedis and the good versus the evil and the light versus the dark, that's not played out the way that we believe in it. It's actually an Eastern religious, Hinduistic, Buddhist principle that for you to actually be a complete person, you must have as much good in you as you do evil. Essentially, you're supposed to embrace what's good and bad about yourself, and therefore that will make you a moderate person in the world. Well, that's a very dangerous idea, because the very idea of good and evil is that they are what? Well, they are opposing forces. So if you're going to say, I'm going to embrace both of these, it's kind of like me saying, I'm going to shove the north end of a magnet with the north end of a magnet. It's not going to work out. They are opposite of each other. It's like me saying, I'm going to put water and oil together, and that's going to make a balanced solution. It doesn't work that way. They separate the moment you quit stirring them up, right? The moment you quit intertwining chaos that brings these two things together, they immediately are going to separate. One's going to be on this side, and the other's going to be on this side. That's a very Eastern religious idea of, well, you know, you just essentially embrace who you are, good, bad, ugly alike. Well, there not only is the problem that that's going to put you in a constant state of conflict within your being, but that also is going to put you in a bad position where you have to answer the question of, well, which of those is going to win? By nature, they are in conflict with one another. Meaning at some point, one is going to rule over the other, and that's going to define who you are during that day and how you act and how you behave and how you do all these things. And it's not going to work out. And then not only that, but if we're sitting here talking about evil in a negative context, why would you want evil to indwell within you as part of who you are? You're saying that evil is a negative thing in the question, right? If God is so good, why would he allow evil in the world? So you want to embrace what you are already saying is bad in an attempt to rectify that question. It's not a good solution, is it? It falls apart. There's not only chaos involved in it, but quite frankly, there's a lot of foolishness in it. It's like me saying that, you know, I want to be... I think that if I eat raw meat with good meat, spoiled meat with good meat, they'll balance each other out and I won't get sick. I think we all know exactly how that's going to work out. It's just not going to fly the way that we would want it to fly. Now, there is another solution, and there's a few more. There's actually four or five quote-unquote answers, but essentially they all boil down to the same thing, which is the idea of diminishing God's power. There's a movement going on in the United States right now that I'm sure you probably don't know anything about, and if you do, I applaud you for paying attention. It's called process theology. And essentially what this idea means is that the way they would answer this question is God is so caught up in the spiritual battle for the souls of mankind that his resources are limited. And not only are his resources limited, but he's an ever-changing and growing God. Meaning that it's kind of the backbone of progressive movements in churches. The Bible, you got to understand, was written during a male-dominated time. Therefore, the roles of women in the church have to change because society has changed. And the only reason that this is all says what it does is because this was written in a male-dominated society. Right? Kind of this little catch-22 of, well, the Bible's not wrong, it's just outdated. Well, you know, God doesn't not care, he's just overbooked. Essentially, we're trying to take God and make him not much more than what we already are ourselves. In an attempt to rectify this question, and not only rectify this question, but for me personally, I'm going to be the one to say the mean thing, to diminish sin, and to diminish evil, and to diminish wrongdoing, and to create a loophole in the system where we can do whatever we want to do and then say, but God's okay with it. And so, when we're talking about the problem of evil, you and I can already agree from a logical standpoint that, denying that evil exists, well, that's just foolish. You, even on a rudimentary level, even if I stopped on the side of a street and I asked every person that passed me that day, is it wrong to kill somebody? The majority of the answers are going to be, well, yes. you may have that occasional devil's advocate of, oh, well, I mean, what's the situation, right? Did your husband cheat on you? This kind of nonsense. But at the end of the day, if you saw somebody die in front of you for any reason whatsoever, you would inherently, instinctually know what had happened was wrong and horrific. So denying the existence of evil, denying the existence of God, well, that would be a dumb way to answer this question, huh? The second way of trying to bring balance to the force, so y'all will never forget that one now, right? Well, that's even more foolish, because if I'm to take the water and oil and put them together, that's not going to work out. You have two opposing ideas. Good is a positive thing. Evil is a negative thing. I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't really want a lot of negative things in my life. You know, the evil is by nature a destructive thing. It doesn't do you any good. And you certainly cannot balance the two out in any way, shape, or form. And then the final one of diminishing the power of God. Well, quite frankly, if you're on here and you say you're a child of God, but you don't believe that God is all powerful, why do you believe in God at all? Would be my question to you. I'm quite blunt with you. If God didn't have all the power that I believe God had, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. It would be a waste of time. If your God is so small, he cannot balance all of the things of the world while also dealing with the other things that he's got going on and up top in the big house, well, then why believe him to begin with? There's no guarantees. If he can't handle multitasking, he certainly can't handle taking care of your soul. So now, let me answer for you the problem of evil according to what the Bible says. Okay, and the way that the Bible goes into this is that there are a lot of points that are made more than giving a direct answer to this question, because there is not a direct answer to this question. And that's not because, oh, well, there's a gray area, or, oh, there's complexity, but rather because of the fact that it depends on what it is you're asking it about. You know, if you're asking about, if God is so good, why is there so much evil in the world? And you're referring to a situation such as Adolf Hitler. I'm going to answer your question based off of your illustration differently depending on what it is. If you ask that, it's a mother dies in birth and now a father is left with his child. I'm not going to answer that question in light of that context the same as I would about Adolf Hitler. So there's a couple of different points that are made that address all of the context of this question. So the first thing that we have to do when we're discussing this problem of evil is that we need to understand that evil was not created or caused by God. That's the first issue that I always take with this problem, is it's why does God allow it? Why are you asking about why God's allowing it, but rather instead not asking why does it exist? That's a much better question. If I'm out and about and there are Legos in the hallway of my house and I get up in the middle of the night and I, for some reason, don't put on my slippers because I have learned over the years that as my child leaves things on the floor, it is best to never go barefoot in the house. You may die for it by the time it's all said and done. But let's assume I have broken my own rule and I go down the hallway and I step on the Legos. The question that I'm going to ask is not going to be, Legos, why did you hurt me? The question that I am going to ask is, why are there Legos in the hallway? What is the origination of this problem? And the origination of evil, us. If you go to the book of Genesis, you go to chapter 1, it tells you what everything God created. And God created a lot of things in this world. He created the universe. He created the atmosphere. He created the forces of gravity and friction and entropy and all these things, right? He created all of the firmament, which is basically the foundation of the foundation of the world, okay? He created the waters of the world. He created the atmospheres. He created the plants and the animals and fish and birds. And he even hand-fashioned you, which is an incredible truth in and of itself, that the idea is that God spoke everything else into the world, but that he fashioned you with his hands. This is going on in Genesis 1 and in Genesis 2. Into Genesis 3, we start kind of seeing the making of man and a little bit more descriptions about what happens with men and what our purpose is that we're to tend to the garden and tend to creation and basically live in this perfect paradise in harmony with God. And then there's the creation of Eve because Adam is alone. And, you know, you have all these things that occur. God creates a lot, but after Eve, there's nothing more about what God creates. What comes next is what man creates. And man created sin and evil and suffering. And this is how we created it. In the beginning, we had two rules. Rule number one was do not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And rule number two is do not eat of the tree of life. The two trees in the center of the garden, don't touch them. The rest of it, you can do as you see fit. And Adam failed to communicate to Eve everything that Eve needed to know about this situation. Eve takes up a conversation with Lucifer, you know, the snake, the serpent, and the tree. They have the discussion of, you know, all basically of Lucifer appealing to all the weaknesses of men, the pride of life, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, these kinds of concepts that if you go to seminary, it's this little three-step thing, they'll give it to you all day long. That's kind of the go-to phraseology for it. Meaning that he appeals to her ego, and he appeals to her desires, and he appeals to the things that she wants. And she partakes in it. But what's implied there is that Adam is witnessing a lot of these things happening, and he also knows better and still partakes in it. So when we have this million-dollar question that we think is a million-dollar question of how is it that a God that is good and great and wonderful and perfect would allow evil into the world? Well, first, you have to look at the origination of evil, and that's not with God, that's with man. And we brought that on through our disobedience of the Word of God. We brought sin into the world through our disobedience. Now, the question that everybody immediately throws to that is, well, why did God even allow it to happen? Well, the reason that God allows it to happen is because God wants a relationship with you. Let me give you a perfect example of how you can understand this. If my wife had been forced to marry me, would the relationship actually have any love and desire in it? Well, no. She's coerced, right? If it's a situation that her dad's in debt, like, well, here we go. We'll go deep Middle East, way back 2000 BC, okay? You know, we'll go way, way back into the deep woods here. Mom and dad are flat broke, and I buy my wife. That relationship is not nearly the same as I court my wife, I ask my wife to marry me, and my wife marries me. A real relationship cannot be coerced. The desire that God had for mankind was that we had an actual relationship with God, meaning that we want to be in communion, in communication with God. That cannot exist without the idea of free will. If you don't have a free will, meaning that you can choose to do right, you can choose to do good, or you can choose to do evil, then that's not a real relationship. You're nothing more than a glorified robot at that point, and a fantastic biological experiment gone right. So when we're getting into the origination of evil, You must understand, God wanted a real relationship with mankind that could not be coerced. That had to be a free will decision on the part of men. And the decision that we made was, well, no, God, we don't really want what you created. We think we can create something that's better. We think we can do it our way. We think we can make it work better our way. And therefore, God let us have exactly what we asked for. So, the first thing that you have to understand about your question is, evil exists because we brought evil into the world. Now, there's another perspective to this, because remember, I told you, I'm not going to answer your question the same way, and depending on the context. If you're asking the question of why would a God that is so great and so good and so wonderful allow evil to exist in the world, and you're asking about Adolf Hitler, I'm not going to answer that the same way as I would if you're asking that question in light of the death of a mother and birth, and now you have a single father raising a child. Those are very different things going on there. There's not the same form of evil, right? Adolf Hitler is explicit evil. This tragedy with the death of a mother and the leaving of a father with a newborn child to raise on his own, that's a tragedy. That's a form of suffering. That's not explicit evil. So the first thing to understand is that evil didn't start with God. Evil started with men. The next thing that we have to look at, if we're going to answer this question in all of its context and all of its illustrations, is that the world is exactly as Christ predicted it would be. There are numerous times throughout the New Testament that Jesus says explicitly, you will suffer, you will suffer, you will suffer. John 16:33 says, here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows. Meaning that even in the context that Jesus is talking here, he's talking to his disciples. He's telling people that are saved, that are God's children, that life is still going to be what? Oh, still going to be difficult. There's still going to be bad things that happen. There's still going to be evil things that happen. There's still going to be problems that happen. Even if you become a saved child of God, there's no magic button that turns off the reality of the world that you live in. Because what tends to often happen with this question is that it's often asked by people who do not believe in God. They don't have a relationship, a salvation relationship with Jesus Christ. Sometimes they don't even have a head knowledge relationship of Jesus Christ, meaning that they don't even understand some basic biblical principles. And they ask this question in light of essentially, well, obviously there cannot be a God because, you know, look at this horrible tragedy that's happened. It's, well, no, even people who are saved promise to not have tragedy. So asking this question in light of a tragic situation, well, it's kind of foolish because even God's people are not promised a quote-unquote easy life. You know, I know there might be some pastors that get in pulpits on Sundays and preach that if you're a good boy or a good girl, you'll get a Mercedes-Benz, but that's not how it works. That's not how the real world works. So evil doesn't start with God, it starts with men. Men create it. God has even told men who have sought after salvation, who are seeking after a good life, that they're still going to experience suffering. And the reason for that is because of the fact that we live in a fallen world. Now, this idea of a fallen world has again to do with the principles of sin and evil actually existing. We've already talked about that there are different ideas and beliefs that their whole basis is to deny that evil exists, or rather to say that evil is a balancing force in the world. And that's not true. Evil seeks to destroy things incessantly. You cannot bring balance through destruction. That's not how it works. You can bring balance through righteous living and through ease of destruction. And so, when we bring in the concept of a fallen world, you must understand that sin has both spiritual and physical ramifications. Now, a lot of people hear that and they go, ooh, now what do you mean by that? That's a little hokey. Well, what I mean by that is that the moment that we sinned, we brought sin into the world, we spiritually died, meaning that we changed not only the spiritual state of people, meaning we spiritually die, but we can also now physically die. Death in all of its forms did not exist prior to the disobedience in the garden. Didn't exist. There was no such thing. But now you have spiritual death, meaning that the soul has been severed from God from birth. You're inherently a sinner by nature from the time that you're born. That's just, it is how it is. And not only did we accomplish that, but we brought in physical death, meaning that we changed how the physical world operates literally off the basis of death. And the reason for that is that death changes everything about the world. Death is something that has created a cycle in our world. If you sit through a basic biology class, the only way for life to continue to exist in this world is by literally running off of the death that comes before it. And so when we did that, we changed the whole system. We had a system built for eternal life, and now we have cannonballed that, and we have brought in evil and sin in the spiritual realm, but we've also brought in physical death. And not only did we bring in physical death, but you also have to take into account the things that are the punishments, the consequences, physically, of bringing sin into the world. Men are called to toil all their days. You'll work hard, and you'll barely make it by. You have women, it says there's pain in childbearing, and everybody immediately assumes that that's just, oh, there's pain during the birth of a child. That's not actually the full picture. The full picture is that of rearing children, meaning that your pain and your sorrow and your suffering with bringing children into the world does not end at birth. It continues through life. Why? Because children are constantly there, constantly trying to do things they ought not to do. Why? Because they're little sinners, just like you. Meaning that there's going to be days that your children put you through misery. I love our daughter to death. She's fantastic. Wonderful toddler. Cannot complain. Did not have it nearly as bad as any other parents. 99% of the time, child is an absolute angel. But that 1% of the time is more than enough proof for me to know that there is evil in the world, okay? That's what that idea is not only is your work and your life going to be harder, but even rearing your children is going to be harder because you are fighting against a spiritual nature that desires to do evil. So, when we ask this question, of how could a great or wonderful, perfect, good, holy, whatever, fill in the good adjective, God, could allow evil or suffering into the world? The first thing is that God didn't create evil. We did. The second thing is that even for those that are saved, evil will still continue to rub shoulders with us. We'll still have tragedies and sorrows. Well, why? Because, third point, we live in a fallen world. We've changed everything. Everything is now built around evil and sin and the nature of what those two things can inflict, not only at a spiritual level, but at a physical level. And then we have the humdinger of a point. And the humdinger of a point is that 99% of suffering and evil in the world is brought on by humanity. Whoa, what do you mean by that? Well, look at World War II. Let's go to our Adolf Hitler illustration. What really happened in Adolf Hitler's life to make his life so horrible and terrible that he needed to do the things that he wanted to do here? Well, absolutely nothing. If you go and look at the early years of Adolf Hitler's growing and rearing and all these things, raised in a mostly Protestant home, He was even known to not even partake in alcohol. I believe he got drunk one time when he was like 21 years of age and said it was the dumbest thing that he'd ever done. He was a patriot of Germany, went into World War I, fought for his country. He was a really decent human being, and then he just kind of warped at this later point in his 30s and 40s, decided that Jews were everything that was wrong, there was no God, and Christianity didn't matter. And then here we go. You have the beginnings of all of this evil. Well, what brought on all of that evil? Well, he did. One man did. If you go and look at the men that worked under him, there's a phenomenal book that I tell people to read all the time that is it's called Ordinary Men, about Battalion 101 and the Poland riots that were going on and these Nazi police officers that go into Poland to carry out pogroms and throughout Poland. All of these men, basically Protestant homes, well-to-do men, go about doing all these evil things. Did God do that? No. These men did the things they wanted to do because they wanted to do them. The nature of humanity is just that. If you go and sit with somebody who's committed homicide or who's committed rape, or if you go and look at a serial killer psychology, you can make some arguments that, oh, maybe, you know, somebody was mean here or there, or they went through abuse or something of that nature, but exactly, where did that come from? Well, that was human brought up. That was something that the mother and the father did. That's not something that God did. When we talk about evil and suffering existing in the world today, in light of a question of how could a perfect, sinless, great, holy God allow evil and suffering to exist, well, the only reason that suffering and evil exist is because we exist. We've created it, and not only do we create it, but we carry it out. And that's all of us to a complete degree. You know, you may not be on here and have committed homicide in your lifetime, but if you've told a lie, I promise you, you've caused somebody many, many, many difficult days and problems. If you've been a contrary person for somebody without any real reason behind it, I promise you've caused somebody suffering and evil, whether you realize it or not, or whether you thought what you did was egregious enough for me to put such a label on it as suffering and evil. It doesn't matter. Every time you sin, you put some evil out there in the ether. That's the reality of the situation. That's not something God does. God does not tell me when I sin, hey, you need to do this sin right here, right now. That's not how it works. Zach Ebarb decides he's going to do that sin right then and right now. So when we're looking at this question, first point of view you have to take into account is where did evil come from? Well, evil was created by men. It wasn't created by God. God created a perfect, sinless world. We brought evil into existence. The second thing you have to look at is that the world is exactly as Christ predicted that it would be, meaning that even for those of us that are saved, there's still tragedy, there's still suffering, there's still evil. That's not something that we dodge the bullet on by getting saved or having a relationship with God. You might diminish causing yourself some trouble, but at the end of the day, you're still going to have tragedy and evil come into your life, regardless of what's going on, because of the third point, you live in a fallen world. And that fallen world is made worse by the decisions of human beings, not because God has carried out evil, but rather because men have carried out evil. And God has to allow these things to exist because you have a free will. You cannot have a relationship with God. Nothing about your life can be real if you don't get to make the decisions that you make, regardless of those consequences and regardless of what it is that you are doing. Now, the next thing that you also need to take into account when you're looking at this question is the fact that not only do we live in a fallen world, not only do we carry out these kinds of things on our own, but you also have to take into account the fact that God intends to judge evil once and for all. You know, the beautiful thing about the Bible is that it's constantly pointing to there is going to come an end of exactly what the question is. Evil, suffering, pain, and tragedy. These things are all going to come to an end. That's the whole point of the Bible. You get into Genesis, you have the fall of mankind, and the rest of the Bible is all about how do we fix this problem? Well, how do we redeem men from being a fallen creature back to what they were intended to be? And how do we rectify and carry out justice at the same time, parallel to this idea of redeeming all of mankind, where God is still just and God is still right and God is still true? And the fact that God took the time to sit down and draw that all up is absolutely phenomenal, in that he could send Jesus Christ as a substitute for the sins of mankind. And in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, man can be made right with God, while God also can still carry out justice on sin and end sin and evil and tragedy in the world and redeem mankind at the same time. That's a phenomenal, beautiful point to all of this, is that when people ask that question, it goes, well, you know, you might think you're on something here of saying, how could there be this great and wonderful God that allows evil to exist in the world? But reality is that God takes an account of every evil and wicked thing that happens. And there's going to come a time that the world will pay for every piece of it. When you get into Revelation and you start to look at what's going on, you will notice that there are many, many times that as the trumpets are being sounded, the seals are being broken, they are talking about the anger and the wrath of God and the justice of God being carried out on the world. And it becomes even more explicitly obvious when we get to that 3.5 year mark, where there is a actual specific illustration that's brought out by John that's happening in heaven, that God summons these seven angels who are carrying seven bowls of the wrath of God, and they are sent out of the temple of heaven, and the doors are barred until such a time as these angels have carried out their duties, meaning that nobody, there's no turning back from this. That's the picture of God. He is carrying out, dealing with evil exactly the way you're saying you want him to. Because that's really what that question is about, is it not? Is why is there no justice in the world? Why is there no accountability for evil? Well, there is. You may not think that there is, but there's coming a day that evil is going to pay for every single little thing it's ever done. And so when we're looking at this question, you have to take into account that God has already said he's going to deal with this. There is one other very, very important point to bring to the table on this, and that is that God has suffered too. Many times we do not take the time, and pastors, we're very guilty about this, and we're guilty about this, and I understand why we're guilty about this and where these men are coming from, is that when you're sitting down and you're trying to get ready, you've got a Wednesday coming. You've always got Sunday coming. For pastors, I don't know if their schedule looks a lot like mine, but I'm sure it looks a lot like mine. Wednesday night, there's a Bible study that I've got to be ready for Wednesday night. Now I even, you know, Mondays, I've got to be ready for Mondays. Then on Sunday, I've got a Sunday school class. In the morning, I've got a Sunday morning sermon in the morning. Haha, there you go. And then I have a Sunday afternoon class that I help to substitute in and cover on. And then there's a Sunday evening. We call it a Bible study, but I think I end up preaching more than we ever end up studying. And what we go through when we're trying to put all these things together is that we are rapidly trying to take very large principles and biblical concepts and not only lay that all out for you guys, but also lay out what this means to you. And sometimes in doing that, we neglect to really dig into things such as the life of Jesus Christ and the fact that if there is anyone in this world who has suffered, it is more so than anyone could ever argue, Jesus Christ. You need to think about this for a moment. You have the Son of God, who the Father decides at the beginning of time, and Jesus is willing, by the way. Jesus is willing to do this. But God realizes that the only way to rectify this is for there to be a perfect sacrifice. And the only way for that perfect sacrifice to exist is for God the Son to take on human flesh, lay aside glory as God, to be able to indwell the physical body of humanity, and then must live a sinless life while also indwelling flesh that is temptable. We know that that's true because Satan takes the time to tempt Jesus Christ himself. Live this perfect sinless life and then suffer horribly and tragically on a cross and die in one of the worst ways men have ever devised to kill another person. And even before we get to that moment, you have betrayal by trusted people. You have the doubting of friends and disciples. You have the loss of life of friends such as John the Baptist, who's beheaded during the time that Jesus Christ is preaching. You have constant trials and pushback from the Sanhedrin court. You have all of these horrible, terrible things constantly going on. And just to throw in the dice a little bit there for you, he's also dirt floor poor, going from place to place, relying on finding his meals out of the goodness and kindness of others. Even when his disciples are getting yelled at on the Sabbath by the Pharisees and the Sadducees because they are hungry and they're walking through a wheat field and they pick some grain to chew on the walk. There's constant problems that come to end of the life of Christ long before we ever get to the cross. And even at the cross, you have six false trials that are carried out. You have Jesus drug before the Sanhedrin court, and before even the whole court arrives, he's tried by Caiaphas, who's the father-in-law of the high priest at that time. Then you have the high priest who tries him. Then you have the whole court who tries him. None of it legal. He's then drugged before Herod. He's drugged before Pilate. Again, none of it legal. Pilate literally knows the guy's innocent, but he's still going to do what he's going to do because he doesn't want to make the Jews mad. He's got problems in Rome. He's got problems here, and he doesn't need a riot on his hands. You have them betraying him for a man like Barabbas, who's a terrible and awful human being. Jesus' sin is, I'm the Son of God. This man's sin is murder and robbery and all kinds of horrible and awful and terrible things. Then you have Christ, who is beaten to the point that even the Bible explicitly points out you'd not known who the man was had it not been for the fact that you were being told who he was. He then has to carry his cross after being mocked and spit on and beaten. And on the way there, he doesn't even have the physical ability to go on by himself. And they pull another man out of the crowd to help him carry his cross. There, he's then nailed to a cross. And if for any of you that haven't taken the time to go and study what crucifixion is and how that death is carried out and what all happens in that form of torture and punishment, go take some time to educate yourself. Because essentially, you bleed to death while trying to breathe, and you have to push up on your own ankle bones to be able to raise your diaphragm high enough to breathe in air. It's a miserable and awful and horrible way to die. And so, when we're talking about why would a good and holy and perfect God allow evil and suffering and death in the world? Well, you know, God knows intimately about all three of those things. So don't you think that if there was a way that those could be dealt with right now here on earth, God himself would have already done so? Yeah. But those things can't be dealt with directly by the power of God, hands on to it, because to do that would be to strip away your free will. And stripping away your free will, again, changes the nature of the relationship. If you're coerced into serving God, that's not because you want to serve God, that's because you are forced into it. And that changes everything about the world, and in fact, it ruins the doctrine of redemption for mankind. There's no way it would be possible without the existence of free will. And there is one final point for you to take into account with this question, and that is that God always manages to bring good out of bad. Think about this for a moment. This weekend, church, we do a community outreach where I pastor. We're getting ready to go out. It's Saturday morning. We meet at 9 o'clock. We have prayer. We have a devotional time. We talk about what neighborhood we're going to. We pass out maps because we'll all get lost in some of these neighborhoods that are around where we are. We kind of talk about things to be concerned about, the area that we are trying to do the work of God in, as a lot of gang activity, a lot of violence, a lot of guns, these kinds of things, drugs, all that. And so we kind of basically put together a battle plan of how we're going to deal with this, and if something comes up, how that problem's to be dealt with, what's the protocol, and how to retreat, essentially. And we were going down there, and my wife had gotten some things for her Sunday school class, and we were running a little bit early. She said, you know, can we stop and put these things in the Sunday school class? And I said, sure, not a problem. We can do all of that. I'll help you get it all set up. And so we go into the back classroom area of our church's building. And when we get back there, my wife says, the floor is wet. I said, what do you mean the floor is wet? We turn the lights on and we had a busted pipe flooding all throughout the back of the classrooms, buildings. Horrible, terrible mess. And the whole time, I, in my infinite wisdom, was angry as an old wet hen because we had to take care of this problem, right? So the community out, gone, done. Hey, we've got to figure out where the leak is at. We've got to check how bad the damage is. We definitely got to get the water out of the floor. If it's something that we can fix, we need to fix it. If it's not something we can fix, we've got to contact a plumber. Depending on the damage, we got to contact the insurance company. It's this big hole to do. And I go, you know, there's just no way we're going to be able to go out today, at least not with me at the helm. If y'all still want to go out, there's breakfast over there, go do it on your own. But otherwise, I'm tied up, and the two deacons with me here are tied up. We've got to get this taken care of. And I was as mad as an old wet hen because this is one of the biggest things that we do during the month. It's very important. We have a community that extremely needs to hear the word of God. So the whole time I'm talking to God about how in the world, why? Like, why today? Of all days, this could have even happened on Sunday. I would not be as irritated as I am right now. Why in the world is this going on? And as I drove to the hardware store to get the part that we needed, was no big deal. We had a little T-section that failed. We put it back in, bada bing, bada boom, done. But as I was going to get the part, long line of police and fire trucks go by. I thought, huh, that's a little bit odd. It's 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. What in the world could already be going on? Well, we had a shooting in the neighborhood where we were going to go. Well, what happened? Well, it was a bad situation. We had flooding in the back. We spent 4 hours working on all of it. But what good came out of it? Well, there's a very likely chance. Can't prove it. But there's a very likely chance that where this particular shooting happened may have happened at the same time that I'm taking young people and elderly people out into a neighborhood to invite people to church. God only knows what kind of tragedy might have occurred. Then next Saturday, we're going to go out and do what we were going to do this Saturday. We postponed it by 1 week. But something bad happened, yet something good may have still come out of it. And as you as a child of God, and even you as a lost person, if you take the time to look through your life, there are so many times in your life that something horrible, tragic, bad ended up leading to something that was better than what existed before it. You may not always realize it. You may not take the time to think about and appreciate it. But it happens nonetheless. So, when asking this question about how could a holy and perfect God allow evil and suffering into the world? You have to remember that evil did not originate with God. It originates with men. You have to remember that evil is still a constant in the life of man, whether they choose to be a child of God or if they choose to continue living in their sinful and lost ways. You have to remember that this is going to happen because we live in a fallen world that's been greatly affected by the decisions that we made to bring sin into it. You have to take into account that most of human suffering is carried out by other humans. It's never brought on by some divine punishment of some sort. In fact, divine punishments always come as a form of dealing with evil that has been carried out by other men. You have to remember that God knows what suffering is like, and God is fully going to judge evil when this world comes to its final end. And you also have to remember that God always brings good out of evil. Now, there is one final point in all of this about this question, and that is when you were asking about how could a good and wonderful God allow evil and suffering and bad things to happen in the world, we have to focus on, is probably a better way of putting it, on that part of allow, because God does allow these things to all occur. And so usually when I say that, this is the moment where everybody goes, aha, we got him, right? He acknowledges all this fancy stuff about God, but he's also now admitting God does allow it. And yes, God does allow it. But God allows it because suffering and evil can play a positive role in the life of God's people. And what I mean by that is this. When you and I are going through hard and tough times. In fact, a wonderful example of this is Psalm 69. David is describing that he's in an ocean of trouble, that his life is in chaos. And in fact, one of the pictures that David brings into this discussion is that he's in the deep mire. And as he's struggling to free himself, he is ever sinking deeper into the mire. And at the same time, these waves are crashing in above him. And essentially, it's as if he is drowning in the troubles that are going on in his life. But in all of that picture, as David is struggling with, God, why are you allowing this to happen to me? Why are you allowing bad and evil and suffering to happen? And he's putting this picture together for you. He begins to recognize that the bad and the evil things that are going on right now and the trouble in his life, first of all, he doesn't have any reason to be upset about because he's made foolish and sinful decisions in his life. Therefore, the moment you and I sin, we are worthy of punishment. Like there's no, you know, you don't get up in the morning and you say, well, I did one good thing today, so that ought to cover me for all the bad things that I did the rest of the day. That's not how it works. Even with my toddler, that's not how it works. If she gets up and she does one good thing, that's not going to change me getting on to her for the next 20 bad things she does. I'm not going to say, well, you know, you did that one good thing today, so it's okay. You can get away with it today. That's not how it works. So David is acknowledging. He says, you know, actually, as I'm mad and questioning God, you know, about these horrible things that are happening, well, why am I not worthy of it? Why, what have I done that is so great that I don't deserve to go through trials and struggles and problems? The next thing that David begins to point out is that his sins and him trying to deal with his sins his way instead of God's way have further deepened the problem and have also allowed for people to falsely accuse him, where he even makes a very interesting point of that he is the mockery of the nobles in the gates all the way to the drunks singing in the streets, meaning that no matter how, what level of life you are, whether you're essentially the town fool or you're a leadership position in the village, that everybody is mocking him and accusing him. But that couldn't occur if he hadn't done the things that he had done that allowed all of this problem to begin in the first place. Meaning that suffering and sin, and God allowing those things to happen in your life, can lead you to being a better person. It can teach you to realize that there's a lot of things that you do in this life that are wrong. And that when you begin to realize that, there's some humility that can come with that. When you have some suffering, when you go through some pain and some problems, it can deepen your character, meaning that it can make you a better person. It can make you more patient. It can make you more loving. It can make you more sympathetic, more empathetic. It can make you more patient. It can make you be a better child of God. He even can use these problems and suffering to reshape us better in His image. What ends up happening to David by the end of Psalm 69? Well, what ends up happening to him is he begins to praise God and thank God because he knows that eventually this trial's going to come to an end. And it's going to come to an end because of the mercies of God, because it's not David who deserves for this to end. It's rather that God is has such goodness, he's going to end it for David, even though David doesn't deserve it. And he thanks God and he praises God in the streets and he continues to ask for God's will to be done. That he doesn't want this problem to be dealt with for his sake, but rather so that others will know that God does indeed exist and that God is worthy of all glory and that God is worthy of our praise and that God is ultimately good and that he moves in season at the right time. There's no better deepening of character than that. It can even give us a better understanding of the spiritual and eternal things in this life. The book of Job is a phenomenal book about human suffering. That's what Job is all about. And a lot of people don't quite understand the book of Job because Job is a lot of poetry. There's a lot of imagery. There's a lot of times that you have to understand what Job is talking about or what these other people are talking about. There's kind of some kind of interesting things, mystically speaking, that I've heard people get out of the book of Job from a poetical standpoint. It's a very hard book for people to understand. But essentially, you can boil the book of Job down to that: why do the righteous suffer? Why does bad things happen in the world? And what happens is that Job is living this perfect and great life, and all of these horrible things begin to happen, and they happen very fast because Satan goes into heaven one day, and God asks Satan, what is he doing? And he's, oh, I'm walking to and fro in the earth and up and down in it. And God just preempts Satan because everybody, oh, he threw Job under the bus. No, Satan was already there for this, and that's God's demonstrating his power. Says, have you considered Job? That is essentially Satan, I already know that you're here because you want to go after Job. And I promise you, you can go after Job, but Job's not going to break. And Satan, you take your hand off of him, I'll get him to break. He'll curse you to your face. And so God says, yep, you can do whatever you want to do, but you can't kill him. And so he loses his children, he loses his wealth, his wife ditches him. His three best friends come up, they sit on the hill with him for 3 days, and they sit in complete silence, and they're being good friends. And then after that, the rest of the story is wrestling with the question, why do the righteous suffer? And the basis for the question is that Job has a doctrine problem, and Job's friends have a doctrine problem. That they believe good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. To kind of boil it down into just regular arcans and talking, okay? And through that whole book, Job is wrestling with this because Job is going, I know I have not sinned to cause this problem. Yet this problem has come anyway, and so Job is trying to rectify his very wrong belief about the world with the problem of human suffering. And through all of that horrible tragedy, Job and his friends come off of that hill by the end of the book of Job, better children of God. And Job is restored by God double what he had before. And yes, I guess you could argue, well, you can't truly restore kids that have passed, this kind of thing. But his kids were all saved, and his kids all spent eternity with Jesus Christ and with God. We know that because the whole beginning of chapter 1 talks about how Job continually sanctified and offered burnt offerings for his children and led his children spiritually in the things they were supposed to do. Meaning that even though Job suffered horribly, Job was a better man afterward for his suffering. So, as you're going about your week, you know, I know this is like this is a large amount of information, and obviously, if you're gonna really be an overachiever and a top-notch student of the Bible, you're going to go investigate all these chapters and all these stories and all these verses that I've given you as proof for these points. Don't just take my word for it. Go prove me wrong. All right? Go find out. Okay? But I want you to start looking at these questions that we're going through and dissecting them for what they are, because the truth about that question is really more so a question of why do bad things happen to me? Does God really love us? Does God really actually care about us? And if so, why do these things exist? And when you break that question down beyond the theoretical nonsense, the desire to be some sort of theologian and philosopher, and you get down to brass tacks of what it's really about, you begin to realize that you live in a world that is in desperate need of the Word of God. It's in desperate need of a relationship with Jesus Christ. It's in desperate need of knowing the realities of things such as evil, and the realities of things such as what is really love, and the reality of the fact that, yes, suffering is bad, but suffering can indeed work into something more positive. The reality that our perspectives on 99% of the things that we run into from day to day are 110% flawed. And that, in fact, we often miss some phenomenal opportunities to grow as God's people and to grow as individuals simply because we have the wrong perspective on what is occurring. And so that is the answer, a very broad answer, to the question of, if God is an almighty and holy and good and great and perfect God, why is there evil in the world? I hope that all of you have enjoyed that question. If you have any other questions that come as a result of this discussion, make sure to send them in. We've changed the whole demographic of this show. We were going book by book and verse by verse, chapter by chapter, this kind of thing through the Bible. And the goal of this show is to get you interested in studying the Bible. And so I went, well, you know, it's going to take me 40 years to teach all of you the entire Bible. So let's start getting down to the questions that are stopping people from studying and doing that digging on their own right now. The first one that we looked at last week was, of course, why does it really matter to study the Bible? Definitely go and listen to that one, because it's extraordinarily important that you study the Bible. But tonight's is this one, and I hope that maybe that's helped you answer it, or maybe if somebody's asked you that question, now you have the answer for them, and you can have a very good and deep discussion with those individuals, and maybe one that will lead to an opportunity to talk about salvation with them. So I hope all of you have an excellent week. I'll see you next Monday at 7 p.m. And as always, all of you get out of here and go study.